Hey guys, welcome in Unpaved. Adam Sager, myself, Coach JB, along for his normal Monday visit. We moved to Wednesday, schedule-wise, for him, and we'll join him in a second. Sags, good to talk to you. Injuries already running roughshod around the league. We got much to get to. Steelers defense, which has in the past become a big plus for them. They're really not very good last seven or eight games. Their defense isn't very good, and they can't stop the run for squat. But yeah, we'll get into that amongst some other things and what's going on across the league and some important matchups, a little college football. We start, Sags, with the Jets and the quarterback and Justin Fields out this week, right?
Yes, they have experienced the full Justin Fields experience in the first 3 weeks of the season. He has a decent game week one against the Dolphins, comes back, lays a stinker in week two against Buffalo. And now he's hurt with the concussion. He will miss this week. So they have seen the full gambit of Justin Fields and what him being the quarterback does to you.
I watch a guy like that, and I know how – I don't need to tell people how talented he's got a great skill set.
Right.
There's no doubt. Great feet, physical guy. But are we at the point in his career – now, I'm not saying that he's not – going to be a starter for the rest of his career and do good things. But with other quarterbacks, we start to realize that 3-4 years in, we kind of figure out who they are and what it's going to be like. Now, he could be Sam Darnold, right? He could be Carson Wentz, where you start off good for Wentz, and then all of a sudden you've become a journeyman. You're getting a start again now for Minnesota, right, with J.J. McCarthy out. He could be Geno Smith. He could be Baker Mayfield. Hell, I don't know. But there's enough evidence for me to see in the analytics and the numbers of it to see this is a guy still trying to become a pure quarterback as opposed, man, he's good skill set, but the crutch, man, but when he's got his feet going, it's a good thing. I've watched Lamar transfer his game. I've even watched Josh Allen transform his game. I've watched Sam Darnold transform his game while he's still, you know, transforming, he's in it. I've watched guys that were known for one thing, whether it's a bust. Hell, I've watched Baker Mayfield even transform his game to more consistency. So you were in Chicago when he's there. You're still in Chicago. I know my buzz in talking about it, and we've discussed it before in the past, but what was the talk about Justin Fields when he was there? Just the buzz about him, whether good buzz or bad buzz. What was it that people held on to, and what was it people couldn't stand in Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, I think when the guys you just brought up, Baker, Sam Darnold, Geno Smith, those guys never really had a problem throwing the ball. Like, you could see at least they had upside as a passer.
You mean throwers first as opposed to runners first?
Yes, yes. You've never seen that from Justin Fields in the NFL. It's always been about his athleticism, his feet, the things he can do to make you miss in the open field. And, yeah, he'd throw a great ball every once in a while, but you knew that you were never going to have a 67-68 completion percentage guy that's throwing for 275 yards a game and 35 touchdowns. You are hoping for 20. Maybe he gives you 7 to 8 on the ground and can make people miss and be a weapon in the run game as well. But Lamar, Josh Allen, who used their feet early on, became, I mean, two of the best, if not the two best quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
By, I think they are right
quite
now.
A margin. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've surpassed Patrick Mahomes and what he's dealing with as he gets a little bit older. But those guys became great passers, not just throwers, because they could always throw, but they became great passers. And Justin Fields has never shown that ability to even get better. I don't think he's ever got better as a passer from his first start in Chicago as a rookie to his last start last week against Buffalo. It's the same exact guy that has all the athleticism in the world, and he's got a great arm. He can throw it, but hitting a guy 15 yards down the field, you miss one, you make one. You miss one, you make one, and that's just not good enough in the NFL to win with.
Sags, you validate how I feel about him. I've, you know, from the time he was at Georgia and transferred to Ohio State, mm-hmm. right, and watched him, he's been the same player. He just has. He's been a player that you're like, man, I'm intrigued with. Who isn't intrigued? We all want what we don't have in our game. Okay. And Justin, I mean, my game pocket, I'm just speaking for yep. me, my game pocket passer before I blew out my knee twice could extend plays pocket guy first, escape second, buy some time, make some throws on a run, but I wasn't going to live there. I mean, we can go through the list. And you're always craving, man, wouldn't it be great to be a 4-5 guy to be able to do that extra stuff to get it, to get 10, 15 more yards.
Right.
And then there's the opposite. The guy who has been – and I talked to Donovan McNabb about this years ago. And we were still talking because, you know, Warren Moon and I had the conversation about when are we going to get over the – Warren being one of my best friends. I always dive deep with him, right, even whether it's in an interview or just in our private times of the when are we going to just call these great quarterbacks who are athletes or quarter instead of the athlete's quarterback. And the focus, let's face facts, the initial thing was, well, with black quarterback, we call them athletes and the quarterback. The reason whether it was warranted or not, hell, you could have Doug Williams, African-American. Doug Williams was a friggin' pocket passer to the nth degree and could flat-ass rip it. But there's – I don't know what it is. It's like we joke about slot receivers. Oh, he's a white guy. He's got to play in the slot. So they followed him around, whether it was done in humor for the white guy or the corner. We don't see white corners. So we don't, you know, we used to joke about that. And then, you know, Warren and I had the conversation of when we're going to get over the just great. Warren Moon was a great quarterback who's just happened to be black. Now you're proud of your heritage and you're proud of where you come from. But it gets to the point where describing coaches or quarterbacks, it wasn't about the color of their skin. It had to be about what kind of player are they? Donovan McNabb was a hell of a player. So Donovan and I had that conversation. I don't remember what the quarterback was. Might have been just the position because he faced it too. You know, athlete was at Syracuse, came out and always looking, even though like Doug Williams and Warren Moon were pure passers who just happened in Warren's case to be able to kill you with his feet when he came out of Washington.
Right.
And so, you know, that thing that follows you around, it's like enough, right? And so when I talked to Donovan, he says, Sean, what we need to have happen is quit referring to people, not me, but we were talking about how people would refer as like, oh man, he's a great athlete. He said, I'm so tired of hearing that. I want to hear great quarterback who happens to be a great athlete, right? And the black thing never came up. You know, Donovan said, you know, we went through that thing. We're past that. Hell, half the league's African-American. So there's this stigma that had followed him around. They got the point. We're not talking about Lamar being an athlete anymore. Lamar beats you from the pocket, beats you with his feet. So does Josh Allen, white or black. My point was, is that, and Donovan made a great point. He goes, Sean, it's basically exhausting to constantly hear, man, what a great athlete. When in our position, it's really athlete. We know we're good athletes. You wouldn't be there. Got to the point where it's like, I want to be looked at, and some were looked at as throwers, whether white or black, didn't matter the color of skin. Oh, man, that guy's got a great arm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they refer that to me. Man, what a great arm. But you want them to refer to you in your NFL is a great quarterback, right? And blacks went through it for one reason, for the color of their skin, which we're past that and they shouldn't have had to because there's plenty of evidence that said different. And the same thing about big, strong white guys. I used to tell guys, hey, man, don't let them just pigeonhole you into being, you know, when I'm talking to high school or college guys I train, don't let them pigeonhole you into just being a big arm thrower because you might be a 6'5", slower white dude.
I said,
prove them you can buy time, but use it right. You know, so both had that stigma, right? And so when Donovan said that, it really made me think, okay, quarterback, which everything that applies to it, leadership, throwing on time, accuracy, the things that a lot of quarterbacks have and the things that they don't have, you try to get. Like I wanted more movement. Somebody else wants to be a better pocket passer. With Justin Fields, we go back to that we still refer to him, man, what a great athlete and kills you. And I guess I'm to the point when it comes to him that – well, the respect for his athleticism is great, but when I'm referring to him as, oh, my gosh, strong arm and, man, can he kill you with his legs, that's telling you the appetizer that you don't believe right now that he's quarterback first. It just is. And I haven't seen evidence enough of it when it comes to the athlete or thrower, athlete, athlete, quarterback, thrower, quarterback. It covers us all that play the position, right? And so when Donovan said that, you start even looking deeper at the position. Okay, where is it coming from, the way they call plays or just the ability of the quarterback? And for all quarterbacks, it didn't matter the color of the skin. Then we got into the conversation about all quarterbacks, right? And it's true. You don't want to be a thrower. You want to be a pitcher. You don't want to be – Maddox was a pitcher. There's plenty of guys who pump at 98 now but can't find the strike zone. And it's the same with quarterbacks. With Justin Fields, says, I've been waiting for the next level. Now, see, the thing that teases you, I've seen flashes of brilliance with the next level, like his opening game. Hell, he played well enough to win.
Yeah.
And then he plays poorly. And then The thing that we haven't got to yet, Segs, and so I'm not saying he can't improve it. I don't think you're ever going to refer to him as methodical quarterback first, difference maker on the edge second. When we do, he will have taken his game to another level. The problem is it's the Dow Jones. Boom, beat you. One day he'll go 22 or 27. Segs, he did it in Chicago. And you're like, damn. And then it disappears, and a lot of those plays come from. The question with me is on schedule, on time, accuracy, anticipation. He does not live there. No. And it's always, or at least early, that's the challenge for him, whether it's the coaching challenge to get him there or whether he's just not going to get to that level, that it's always going to be make a difference other ways, that being a quarterback beating you from that hula hoop in the pocket is going to be the other part of your game, not the main part of your game. I'm telling you right now, the main part of Lamar's game, Lamar is beating you from the pocket. Josh Allen beats you from the pocket. They just have an unbelievable ability to destroy you five times a game or more with their legs. And so what do we refer to? We show the highlight of the legs, yet the methodical part of a slant route completion, a flat route, which both of them make, right? And so with Fields, I see it and I see the intrigue. Siggs, you're always the guy who thinks you can fix him because he's – put it this way. Some of the other names we just named have a third of the gifts that Justin Fields has, you know. And he seems to love football, but there's the part of, okay, can we rely on you to beat the opponent most of the time? I always say this. If your biggest strength is taken away, can your weakness still sustain you?
Yeah.
If Josh Allen doesn't beat you, or if Lamar Jackson doesn't beat you with their arm, they can beat you with their legs. I'm talking about consistently.
Consistent.
And we've always said, and I said that early in Lamar's career. Well, can Lamar beat you from the pocket, throw him 35 times if they take away his legs? Well, first off, the challenge is, can you take away his legs, which is hard enough to do. But he has proven to me over time that he can beat you from any spot, wherever his launch point is. Josh Allen the same way. We're starting to see other guys. Hell, Jaden Daniels, we start to see it. So for me, if I take away Justin Fields' biggest strength, and we know what that is, the ability to destroy you with edge and breaking contain. And I say, well, can he beat you if you take that away on a regular basis, not once in a while, playoff-type team basis, to where we say that's a quarterback who has expanded his game and has taken it to a new level? And right now the answer is no. And unfortunately, the injury, because I want to see it, because he teases me, because I'm intrigued with the skill set. But right now, I think it'd be hard to count on him, which leads me to Tyrod Taylor starting. I'm not sure. Well, I am sure. In the methodical part of what you're trying to accomplish in an offense first, Tyrod Taylor right now probably gives you a better chance to win consistently if he's healthy. Just because, Segs, you watch him, Tyrod's always been known as a high-percentage completion guy. That, and teams love him. Everywhere he goes, he uplifts that position, whether he's the backup or the starter, and you can count on him. So for me, the guy from the pocket who's going to beat you more, which may give the Jets a better chance, is Tyrod Taylor. Now, he doesn't have the ability that Fields does. That's why Tyrod is going to be in the league for 20 years because what he brings to that, and what Justin Fields, the tease of his athleticism, and you see flashes of it in his pocket passing at times, you see, man, I got to keep signing him and give him a chance because I'm going to be the guy that fixes it. I right now will not shock me. Who the Jets play this week, Segs? I mean, I didn't even think about it. I can't even remember who they play. Sure. I can tell you this. Be shocked if Tyrod Taylor goes out and has a 18-24, 21-27 game and they win. It may be for 227 yards and no picks, just enough movement to buy time. But there's a rhythm to Tyrod Taylor that I like. As a guy, I trust him coming off the bench to start for me. I think you can sustain a passing game better with him.
They are in Tampa to face the Bucs and Baker Mayfield.
Would it shock you if he goes in there and plays out of his mind?
No.
Good football.
It has them in the game towards the end of the game.
Agreed.
And this is where it comes back to, you know, how long, how many teams, you know, we've seen the Steelers do it. Now we've seen the Jets do it, are going to give Justin Fields a chance. If you're Justin Fields and a team comes to you and says, we would like you to be like our third string quarterback, but we're going to use you in different ways. The question always comes out about different guys. are, if you're Justin Fields, are you open to that being, you know, used as a wide receiver, used as a, you know, a gadget guy in terms of a quarterback that can run short yardage, you know, out of the zone, kind of like an RPO guy that can keep the ball, come in for certain packages. Is that something you could see Justin Fields doing, or is that even just not in the realm of possibility in the NFL like it is in college?
Oh, I think it's in the realm of possibility. I think he's gifted enough to do it. I think he's at the point now where he's a quarterback and only a quarterback. I don't think you'd ever see him do it. Now, if all of a sudden he got beat out and was the backup, and they say, we got third and four. We want the ability. We want the run pass ability for you to come and have packages for him.
Yeah.
I think he's past that stage. I think that he would, and I would probably, if I was him as well, look at it and say, well, and I know some people are going to say, well, he can extend his career. Well, he's making $20 million this year. He extended his career this year. He was named a starter. Right. So there's still that ability that says, no, I'm not switching. I'm going to say absolutely not. I don't even think it's an option at this stage of his career. And I'm not sure anybody would ask him package if he got beat out. But to say, hey, man, could you switch to play in this position? Like who? What, Braxton Miller? Quarterback was great quarterback in college, moved into receiver, played a little bit, but it didn't pan out there. I think he was banged up too. Fields is a better quarterback than him. I don't think we're at that point. It's a compliment to say, dude, I could actually line you up and you could probably be one of my four wides and survive in this league. The other side of it is it's a slap in the face for a guy who's had some success, who's still, quite frankly, we say infancy, still in the youthful part of his career. You know what I mean? What are we, year four? The guy still is, aren't we in year four now? Or is that what
I want to say five.
Maybe this is year five.
Yeah.
Three Chicago, one in where he was last year, Pittsburgh, and now the starter here. Yeah. So 5 years, it's the moving time where he's got to elevate to extend it as a starter, because now you're at the point where somebody would say, well, we got the seventh pick of the draft. He's our starter. It's on a 1 year deal. Yeah. Let's go. We need to invest in what it may look like, what we're trying to accomplish. But no, I think the slap in the face is, and I know some people say you got to put your ego aside. At that position, it's hard. I think that ship has sailed. He's a quarterback or he's not. I don't think that you'll see him do anything else other than play that position in a league.
Yeah. So we'll see how Tyrod Taylor plays this weekend in Tampa Bay. Sean, something else that came out. The Philadelphia Eagles, their offensive linemen have heard enough about all the tush-push debate, all the tush-push. You know, of course, they want it to stay because it's easy for them. They get the first down damn near every single time they run it on a 4th-and-1, 3rd-and-1, 2nd-and-1 goal line. They normally get in or get the first down. But we saw two nights ago, I forgot which team it was, trying to run it out of the end zone. And after Sunday, where we saw multiple false starts on the Eagles that weren't called, we saw them lining up offsides, including the center being over the ball. A team tried to run it, and then all of a sudden the officials are stopping play to basically tell them they're offsides. And this is where it gets too much. I mean, when the Eagles are getting away with it week after week, and yeah, now maybe from now on they'll call the offsides or whatever, but it's still been such a weapon for this offense that they're getting away with penalties even and still getting the playoff. Your thoughts on the Eagles? I mean, we all know why the Eagles offensive linemen want it to stay, but where are you at as of today on the tush push being a legal play in the NFL?
Well, what it tells me, Sigs, one is I don't blame the Eagles for wanting to do it because they're better at it than anybody in the history of it. So, of course, they want to do it because it's a macho thing and we dominate and we can't stop us and this is an easy first down. Now, just count the players in the backfield, Sigs. You got to have four of them. You got to have four people off the ball. And to my knowledge, I see four off the ball. Now, that doesn't take away from that. Right. That's not on the Eagles. That's on the friggin' officials. And don't tell me the side judge can't see that. That's bullshit if he can't.
Right.
If it is, I better get another side judge. So it's one thing to have the rule set up that you can run it. It's another thing to have the rule set up that you can run it, and you're giving them an advantage in the middle of the field or at the goal line where they're leaving before the ball snapped. It's like a rolling stop. It's a law. You go to a rolling stop at a stop sign, you're supposed to get a ticket. right? If the cop is sitting there watching you, oh man, it's not that it's harmless. Nobody was at the intersection. Yeah, you dumbass, but you rolled through a stop sign when somebody was. It's a ticket. Same thing here. Oh, great thought process. I can get to the end zone and it's legal, although the rolling stop isn't. But the fact of the matter is that how do you stop a rolling stop? You give the ticket. How do you stop this? You penalize them, move them back to five, and then you don't have to deal with the shit. So that's right. The officials and only the officials, which tells me another reason why we should be able to review every friggin' play that you and I have talked about. Doesn't mean you get more red flags, but you should be able to review every play. If I'm a Philadelphia Eagle, I give you the middle finger and say, stop it, deal with it, it's legal. I got four guys in the backfield, seven on the line of scrimmage. It's a legal play. Now, if you want to come in and then what's going to happen, I think eventually, because even replay guys, like we said, Blandino can't stand it. I think it's going to be an overwhelming, because what happens when enough people don't do it well? They sit in a room and say, let's fix it. It's unfair. There's nothing unfair about it. They just practice it better than you do. And they're physical and stout at doing it. But I'm looking at, hell, why can't Detroit do this?
Right.
Well, they got to do it. Why can't Buffalo do this with that big ass quarterback they got? So, and they got tight ends that weigh 255. They got offensive linemen at 310. But you do have to work on it, because there is an art. Because trust me, I hated quarterback sneaking, because you were primed for a damn headshot every time you did it, right? Somebody's flying in there, and it's not a cheap shot or helmet to helmet, because it's interior within a couple yards of the line of scrimmage. Back then, nobody gave a shit about helmet to helmet anyway. Yeah. So I love for Philadelphia. I do. It's not sitting on the fence. If I'm Philadelphia, I'm giving you the middle finger saying, bitch all you want, you teams that keep bitching about it. We keep kicking your ass. And while it's a rule, I'm still running it. I don't give a rat's ass what you say or about your optics. They're wearing a ring partially because of it, because they dominate on third and one and fourth and one all the time. To me, the optics call it Bush League. So I'm on Philly's side, but if you're sitting there saying, I get it, or injuries, but yet, how many times are we coming out of this quarterback sneak where people are saying they're injured?
Right.
We don't. So hell, there's a bigger chance to get injured when a guy's got a clean shot at your back when you can't see him than when you're head on and you got a bunch of guys protecting him. I don't like the optics of it. If you don't like the optics of it, then say at least one or two players have to be 5 yards removed on a – when you get to this situation, on a jumbo situation, they got to be removed. But what if that team comes down there and wants to line up in this formation on the 4-yard line, Segs?
Right.
On the 4. And it's first and goal on the 4. And they want a quarterback sneak it 4 times and get in the damn end zone. So I don't know how you stop, how you change the rule. It's a legal formation. But if you want to say, well, in tight quarters, it's got to be off. Or you just say, listen, so you can't have, you know how you end it? You can't have the guy behind you push.
Right.
That's how you end it. Line up however you want. You can line up with a guy next to him and next to him, just like that, but take the guy behind him that pushes, and he has to be to the side of the quarterback. In this jumbo situation, you're not allowed to line up behind the quarterback and push it. You're not allowed to push the quarterback at all. If you want to do that, yet here's what comes. Wide receiver catches a ball on a 10-yard at the 10-yard line, is running down. They tackle him at the 5, and he's grinding and grinding. The lineman can come down and run and unload on his own guy and push him in the end zone at work. So right. If it's tight quarters, so are you going to get rid of that too, that nobody can help you back in the end zone, which used to be the rule, and now they brought it back? It looks Bush League. I hate it from the optics point. But if I'm on the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm middle fingering you and say, don't be a pussy. Stop it. That's what I'm saying.
Triple E, if you have the picture of the from above that you put up just a few minutes ago of with the line across the offensive line of the Eagles, if you can put that up. Now, Sean, okay, look at this picture here.
While you're doing that, JB, he had some stuff outside of football world he had to take care of.
Okay.
So we'll reschedule him. He was just – and he got caught. What a shock. There's L.A. traffic, and he got caught.
Yes.
So we'll take care of it. JB will join us on his normal Monday on Monday back at it. What were you saying, Segs? Okay, right. What do you want to know about this picture?
Look at this picture here. Now, the center is offsides, right, because he's over top the ball. His helmet is past the ball. So that's offsides, right?
Yeah.
Like, you okay, so – and now
– if my edge rusher lines up offsides, he's offsides. But so is 95.
Right. Right. And see, that's the only way defenses feel like they can do this, is being that close. But now, is the rest of the offensive line, because they have this line, right? Are any of those others offsides?
I'm assuming, where's the ball? Like 2 inches shy of that white marker? Like 3 inches on the Philadelphia side? Because the players have got their hand.
The 5-1, maybe the back of Juergens helmet.
Take a look at 5-1's neck, right? The white little line on his neck, and go straight down from there. Kind of like that, right? Right? Like neck, like where his neck would be. That should be offsides because you're ahead of the ball. But you know what? In this thing, and 95's offsides. Now, if the ball was on the white line, then you got five guys on defense offsides and one guy on offense offsides because their hands are on the line and they're past the line of scrimmage. But where it's at, one guy, 50,
what about 95 56?
Is off. 56 is onside, in my opinion, depending on if the ball is where we think it is, Siggs, judging by the center, I'm going to think that the 56 is toeing the line a little bit where if you're a referee, you probably let it go. Now, if that was a defensive player at 90, I mean, if there was a penalty called, you know who's going to get called for this? Not 51. 95. They're going to call 95 on it because everything favors the offense. So, but that illegal movement, that's why you should be able, in real time, it looks hard to get that. Everybody's in there bunched up and go. The one we saw a little sooner, Triple E, if you find that back, go back to that side judge view where they moved early at the goal line. And it's okay, you can't see it. That's why, Segs, if I'm on the other side and I got a red flag left, I should be able to say, watch this now. 1,001, 1,000, dude, they've impacted. They have hit the defensive front before the ball is snapped. So with that, he hasn't even started forward Jalen Hurts yet.
Right.
And they're already a half a yard deep into the end zone. For me, the way to do that is if you got to see this real time, I get how tough it is. It's bang, bang, like you see at first base on a bang, bang play with a guy that's got speed. You should be able to go back and look at that exact camera view. And if you've got one red challenge on the sideline, because everything's a judgment call, that is a difference in a game or not. Throw that red flag if you're Andy Reid, right? Come out and say, we had a legal procedure on the offense. 5-yard penalty, still second down. Now they've got to get in regular – or now if they want to line up and do it again from 5 yards out, have at it. We'll line up and try to do it again and see. But that's how you should be able to review that because you gave them a free play, which leads to a touchdown. If they're going to be able to line up in the formation, they got to get off the ball and be lined up like every friggin' buddy else does, now with the advantage. Yet if you're Philly, you're going to push that envelope until what, Segs? Until you're continually called on it, until they take it from you. So the problem is if Philadelphia keeps jumping off sides like this, it's going to make it easier for the NFL to take it away saying, you know what, it's too confined, we can't do it. Or it's going to change the rule where we're going to say, be able to review whatever you want with your two red flags, which I kind of like because I would have thrown a red flag on that, moved them back to the 5-yard line where they're not nearly as efficient as they are. They're like, what, 98 out of 100 or where they always get the first down, right? So it's whatever it is. Their percentage of this is as good as any percentage for any team doing anything in the league.
Yeah, and Dr. J here says, feels gimmicky, just like when a field goal blocker jumps over the center. And we saw that in the game. Now I'm going to blank on which game it was, where they pushed down on the center. It was the Colts game. They pushed down on the snapper, and then a guy went over top to try and block the field goal, and they called the leverage play. Well, in my opinion, if you're going to let the offense do this kind of stuff, then you should be able to line two guys up over the long snapper and have two guys behind them shoving them through the long snapper. I mean, and that's just where, and you say, the NFL always favors the offense. And when it comes to anything, like you should be able to do that then. If you're a defense or a special team, trying to block a game-winning field goal, you should be able to push right through this long snapper.
No doubt. And why can't I line up? It's a great point by Oldman 016. If they're going to do that, why can't I line up with all 11 bodies inside the tackle? I guess I can't. And why can't I start pushing on my guys from the defensive side?
Right.
And get and bring in my jumbo personnel where I take out two corners and my dime personnel down there is two defensive tackles, line them up behind the nose guard and push ahead and pound the same. I mean, I'm talking about on special teams or anything.
Yeah.
But when I was playing, you could hammer the dog shit out of the center.
Yeah.
That was part and parcel to forcing bad snaps. We loved it. And I still to this day, well, it's safely. No, just don't hit him in the head. Why can't I don't understand. Put pressure on the center. It's now you're basically saying, like the kickoff, you're not allowed to touch the center. You talk about the greatest job in the world now since they can't hammer you at the line of scrimmage. Being a good long snapper, dude, you got it made. But yeah. I've never understood, once again, well, we love points. Do you? You love points when your team scored them. You don't love points when it's the other team scored them. So we put the defense at such a disadvantage. And I am with you 100%. If I want to line up 11 guys on the right side of the line of scrimmage, why can't I? Now, of course, well, my quarterback's going to sprint right, go the offensive yeah. right as opposed to defensive right. But my point is, if I'm in a legal formation, and what constitutes legal on defense? You know, you can only have so many guys on one side of the ball. So many. If I want to run from 5 yards and I've got athletic ability enough to pull a Troy Polamalu on special teams like he'd do during the regular, I don't understand why yet we'll allow an offensive player to leapfrog you in open space, but right. I'm not allowed – my middle linebacker is not allowed to athletically – I'm not talking about hitting the center in the head. Somebody hitting the center up high, not cutting where it's a chop block. You cut and I'll hit him up high, and then we'll bring a third guy. Where you engage the center, and my guy can jump over in the A gap, and he's athletic enough to do it, and he's 6'5", tight yeah. end who's athletic. Why can't I put Pitts there and let him do it with his athleticism and go block? I just have never understood why. I know gimmicks exist, but the NFL's created these gimmicks. Look at our friggin' kickoff. Look at how we kick off. Look how we go. I mean, we've moved the extra point back to challenge the kicker. I mean, all these things, which makes it exciting. But wouldn't it make it a little bit better if the defense had the same fight and chance that the offense does? And I'm an offensive guy saying it. So
yeah.
The gimmick is ugly. But if you're going to give the offense all this leeway to do stuff that looks bad, but they're good at it and it's a legal formation, why in the hell – is the long snapper protected from getting his ass handed to him on a shoulder-to-shoulder block? No head hit anywhere. That's not my point. If I can grab him and pull, and my guy can pull, and I can pull him, that's not – I'm just engaging like a left tackle does to your rush end. He right. can get in – as long as his hands are inside the shoulders, they're never calling holding. You keep him in here, you're going right. to have it all the time. It's when you come out here. So if I can – my nose tackle can grab the center and yank him down, and I can sprint through the A-gap or I have to jump over it, what's the problem? Well, we don't want injuries. Listen, you pussies, we play football for a living. Yes. Unfortunately – see, my dogs even agree. Yeah. Unfortunately that, you know, we have injuries, but eventually – so what are we going to do? Oh, well, this we're not allowed to hit a receiver past 15 yards when he catches it because it might hurt him. Listen, the rules have made us think that it's softer. It's not the player. There's plenty of tough players.
Right.
But, you know, you've gotten into the point where when there's not a flag, we look around, oh, that was a hit. They're looking for a flag on a legal hit. So, me, stop this. Well, you know, a guy can get hurt. Yeah, he sure can. But when you made the decision that this was going to be your career choice, if a guy gets hurt from a legal block or if I get hurt from a legal tackle, you don't need to simplify the game anymore. For me, it's an unfortunate set of circumstances that happened. I blew out my knee twice. Had shoulder. What are you going to do? What right. am I supposed to do? Change it because, well, I blew it. No, dude, you took a hit that was unfortunate, and that's the price you pay for making $10 million, $15, $20 million to play a game. Now, cheap shots to the head, get rid of that guy. But the rules have got to be favor where both have an even fight at it, and we know damn well that ain't the case.
Well, and I watched an interesting video this morning. A.Q. Shipley, who used to play offensive line for the Colts. I think he was with the Browns right. at one point. Now he does some offensive line tape on Twitter and kind of goes through stuff, and you can learn a lot from his Twitter. But he put up a video today talking about, you know, just basically the safety for offensive linemen in terms of – he showed a video of Quentin Nelson making a block and then sprinting out for like a quick screen and trying to get to the second or third level. And the DB, I don't know who it was, came in and just cut him right at the knee. And Quentin Nelson was hurt, was out, missed, you know, so many plays, came back in the game. But, and then he showed other players that I think it was Graham Barton on the Bucks, the first round rookie. He comes across the line and he gets cut right at the line by a defensive player right at the knee. And he's just saying they don't call those penalties, but we've seen so many soft ass penalties when it comes to quarterbacks. We saw a couple this weekend where, you know, they get hit high, a little high, maybe a hand touches the neck area or like the bottom of a face mask, and it's boom, penalty. And everybody's always said, oh, well, the quarterbacks make so much money. And they do. And you want those guys to be out there. But we've got offensive linemen now making close to $30 million. We've got offensive guards now making Tyler Smith from the Cowboys just got an extension, high 20s as an offensive.
Well, he's the highest paid lineman in football now, interior lineman.
So, I mean, we got to protect those guys too. It's just there's so many parts of this game where you can't do this if you're the defense. Or if you're an offensive lineman, you're getting cut. We're never going to call it. We're never going to call that cut block or the cut, whatever you want to call that. But if a quarterback gets, I mean, even slightly touched, and it makes it worse, too, that the quarterbacks are always looking for it. I mean, it's just like the NBA where all we see is a guy shoots the ball and he immediately looks at the officials for a foul. And then they're yelling at the officials. It's just all sports. All sports have been pussified, and it is maddening.
It's maddening and insufferable. And listen, I'm all about protecting players. Nobody wants a guy to not know where his daughter's at school is when they're 65. Now, unfortunate risk you take, and you hope you get out of it on the other side, financially stable and healthy. Of course you do. I mean, and we've put so much head emphasis. What about the guy who walks with a cane because his hip or his, we don't ever care about that. Right. I've never understood that there's more lower half injuries than there is concussions. Although I understand the cerebral part and all the stuff that goes on with concussions, that unfortunately some guys are just going to go helmet to helmet or get hit or hit their head on the turf. I've been there, suffered a concussion from that. I get it. But it's almost as if we say, oh, knees and Achilles and shots to the rib cage don't matter. And well, in football, if it's a legal hit, they shouldn't matter. And here's what it bothers me is we are so close and have been for a while to losing the integrity of tackle football. I'm all about equipment being better. I'm all about no cheap shots and trying to. But think about this. A guy gets around a rush in and he's chasing a quarterback. Or quarterback's in the pocket. He beats him to the nine, you know, gets upfield and bam, runs by the left tackle. And dives at the quarterback at his middle back because he can't quite get to him. He dives to get him. Quarterback takes a slide step to the right to reset. And he hits him in the calf from behind and the quarterback falls back. They're going to call a penalty on that.
Yep.
Because you went for the lower body yet. No, I didn't go for the lower body. You got a coffee can size window to hit on a quarterback or you're in trouble.
Right.
So when you do that, it's like, well, wait a second, man. Or if two guys are suspended, one's diving for a ball and the other's coming the other way to dive in front of him and they happen to hit helmets, the offensive player is going to be in it. Or if the offensive player, the defensive guy's going to get him in the thigh and the offensive player catches it and dips his head, it'll call it on the defense. Even though it was not intentional, he was trying to get out of the way and not hit him. So in quarterback, so you call that. I mean, so what are you supposed to do? If you're a defensive player and you say, I'm going to get penalized anyway, aren't you naturally thinking, I'm going to get my damn money's worth, right? Yeah. So I just – and you're right. Linemen go out there. And so people know at home there is a bigger difference. There's a big difference in a cut block and a chop block.
Right.
A chop block is if I engage Segs in the upper body and all of a sudden my other lineman comes down and hits him below the waist. That's Bush League. And we'll see it once on accident or sometimes. Some may do it on purpose. Or the tackle has a guy blocked and the back comes up to chip and he chips him low and cut. Yeah. That's illegal and it's penalized and we can't do that. But here's what we've done. You're not allowed to block low
right.
on a special teams play. Yet I can get my back in space and my guy can go out there looking to guard on a pull to get out there and get the edge and try to go kick somebody out for him. That dude comes up and takes him out so somebody else can make a tackle. We're okay.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? And I don't think they've changed that rule, Segs, have they, about you could still go take the lineman out.
Yes.
Or if I'm a back and you got me by and a coordinator and a protection is dumb enough to slide the line one way and put a back on a 260-pound edge rusher or a lineman where you go small on big and his only way he's got a chance to survive is to do what, Six? Cut him? You're allowed. As a matter of fact, when we played Richard Dent, it was like, whatever you do, don't cut him early in the game because maybe you'll get Richard in one of his moods where he's like kind of a little casual going in, Big Rich, and then we get a back to cut him and you're the quarterback getting the house and motherfucker, why'd you cut him?
Yeah.
Now he's going to play like a man possessed and wreck the game, which Richard did regularly. But sometimes you get him and you'll know in the first series, like, oh, maybe Richard's going to take a little quarter and a half to get in, but don't speed it up. Don't cut his ass. Yet a back on Richard did. It's like, well, I can't block his ass in his upper body. So you cut him. And then those guys hurt a knee and they're pissed at the world because you're allowed to cut him. So once again, yeah, of course, linemen get hosed in all of it, dude. They get hosed in all of it. Splits it, offsides, boom. A little bit of illegal movement, trying to get a head start. Well, you can't because the ball's not snapped. So, you know what? I don't know. But the problem is if we start fixing all this, we might as well just play flag football. And most players will tell you, I'm just telling you now, Sags, that these coaches are teaching clean hits. And we're to the point where clean, brutal hits, clean, where I put my shoulder in a guy's sternum. That we are, do you realize that you're clean sternum, that you are actually, that you, if it's vicious and it looks vicious, some will call it a penalty now if you go back and view it. And Isaiah's right. That's why I asked. I had thought a while back they had changed it if a lineman is, they treat it like special teams where you're not allowed to take him in. Now, you can go unload on him in the upper body and take him out, but you can't cut a guard in the open space like when he's pulling to take him out and allow the other guy to come and come clean up.
But upper see, body. That's what A.Q. Shipley was complaining about, that he's seeing it all over the game right now.
And they're not calling it.
Right.
There you go. Because I was saying, I know that they made a change to protect linemen on the edge. They treat it like special teams. You can't go below the waist, take him out in order for another guy to clean up. Now, you can go unload, put your helmet in the sternum. I mean, your face mask in the sternum or shoulder and stuff, and clear him out for another guy to come. That's called football. But that's his complaint, that they're still allowing that to happen.
Yes.
A cut block on the edge on a pole or a screen, and they're not calling it, yet they're allowing the other stuff to happen. So that part they've helped. But the problem is we keep doing this. What happens is, where do we play tackle football?
Right.
If you keep doing it. So while I don't want injuries, but most players you talk to say, even the quarterbacks who play now, if you got them in a room and everybody was having a beer, you know what they'd say? Yeah, the rules are way too lenient on us, but we still snap our head around to look and see, am I going to get the call? Because, hell, the rules allowing it. Give me free 15. So we have the quarterback position more than any other. Linemen get the most disrespected. Defense and linemen are – defense is always, because the rules are set up, you got to be something special on defense to play man. And then the linemen are like, oh, don't worry about them. He blew out a knee, he'll be okay. Yet a guy gets a slight concussion and we're all worried about him. We're stopping the game for a slight concussion. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. So – but we also – the quarterback play, it doesn't mean that they're soft, but you cannot compare the way Terry Bradshaw or Marino played with the rules, or the time I played – with the way the guys are now. You can argue who's a better, what era's better football. You can argue who the better quarterbacks are. You cannot argue that the rules make it easier for the quarterback to be successful, which is even more mind-boggling when a guy can't complete 50% of his throws.
Right.
I mean, you know, going in, hell, you can milk it for whatever. And if you're a good actor, 15 in Kansas City will get you a couple extra calls a game.
Yes.
And you're a star. They just add you're going to get a half a dozen calls during the year that favor you because we got to protect our precious. But I do know this. What's the one thing we complain about for quarterbacks when linemen are hurt in our plan? We got to protect our quarterback because we don't want him to get killed. Yet we know how important they are as a player, but the league, we almost treat linemen like they're disposable.
Yeah.
And it's bullshit. So, and I'm being serious about that. If you're not a quarterback, if you can't complete 55 to 60, just I'm talking about just 60% in this league with these rules, then you might be playing the wrong position.
My favorite penalty that is called on hits to the quarterback is the, and we saw one this past weekend, where they hit him, they wrap him just like you're taught, head to the side, you hit him chest, and then you take him down, they've got the ball, and you sack them. Well, they expect them to, as they hit them and take them down, to basically stop like a foot above the quarterback and roll to the side. Because if you land on top of them, it's a 15-yard penalty. So they expect these 300-pound men to basically stop, levitate for a split second.
Yeah, it's Matrix with Keanu Reeves. Yes. It's the Matrix. Yes, that's what they expect.
That's my favorite when they called that. And every analyst on every game that has that call is like, what is the guy supposed to do? Because if he hits him and just shoves him, they'll call a penalty anyways. And so it's just,
And then you can hit him, and then you're on your way down, and you have to take your arms off, and then you lose protection for your own damn body. I mean, it's crazy. And the thought of what you expect a 300 pounder to look like Keanu Reeves in the Matrix, which he can't. And the thing that baffles me is that you go watch practice. These coaches are teaching SIGs. They're teaching good tackling, head up, wrap up. Now, we know a lot of guys don't have that good technique because they just want the knockout shot and they miss tackles. We saw it happen with the Texans against Tampa this night. We see it in every game. You're looking for the Sports Center knockout shot, like, damn, right? But even nowadays, a good clean tackle, you catch, wrap up, and drive the guy down. You kind of got to be – you can't drive him.
You can't.
I don't mean drive him into the ground where you pile drive him and try to hurt him. I'm talking about you drive him in technique, and they always tell you to hit through the player.
Yes.
Well, if you hit through the player now, you're going to get your ass in trouble, right? Hit through him, not to him. Well, now if you hit to him, these big bastards are bouncing off you and saying, you only hit to me? You got no shot, dude. You got to hit through me. The Derrick Henry's, and you saw it in the Tampa game, they're treating defensive players like a bitch. If you come up and say, well, I got to break down and kind of hit to him, they're like, take the penalty, dude, or you're going to be embarrassed because I am running my ass right through you. Because the running backs hit through you, but the defensive player can't hit through you because, well, too much excessive force is what we call it. And it's, you know what, there's a lot of great things to love about the NFL, but there's a lot of things that make you shake your head and say, please don't get too gimmicky. We're not going back the other way, though, Segs. That's the problem.
Yes.
They're not going to go back the way. Man, I want to see a quarterback take a hit and stand your ass in there and your chin's bleeding and you got to just deal with it. Nah, that's archaic thinking, Sean. We're not going to do that. We're going to pay him more. And the more you – Segs, we're, 3 years removed now? 3 years away from $75 million a year, probably? Yeah. Think about it. Let's say Jaden Daniels plays out of his mind for the next three years. Aren't we well, we're already at 60.
Yeah.
Aren't we staring? Or if Mahomes goes and gets another contract, you know, shares his up and gets another.
Yeah.
And if you're Mahomes, can't you go to Kansas City and say, well, I'm not playing unless it's $80 million a year? Right. Of course he can because of his results.
Yep.
So we're that far. Yet, and the more that money goes up, the more we're basically playing 11 on 10.
Can do to them. Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
All right, let's jump to some baseball. We haven't talked a lot of baseball since I joined the show, but Cal Raleigh hits number 55 and 56 last night, passes Mickey Mantle for the most home runs in a season by a switch hitter, and he tied Ken Griffey Jr. for the most home runs in Seattle Mariners history.
Two decent players, huh?
I mean, you want to talk about a season that Cal Raleigh's having, and on top of it, like we've talked, because we've talked a little bit about him, best catcher defensively in baseball, or arguably the best defensive catcher in baseball. I mean, what a season by him. And he's got the Mariners leading the division by a half game.
First place.
Yep. 83-68. And it's going to be a fun race down to these last few games. Well, we got about 10 games left for each team. So these last 10 games mean a lot. But what, I mean, put it in perspective of some of the seasons you've seen in baseball history, what Cal Raleigh is doing this year.
You know, Segs, we're talking about it, and I'm kind of thinking MVP too, right, in the American League. I'm thinking we'll get to that in a second. Do you know, and if I'm – maybe my math is wrong, but I think I'm right, my memory, because big man, you know, McGuire and I went to school together, and I went to a bunch of games along the year when he was on that, like in San Diego, when he was on that pace, right? Watching him in batting practice was like the game. Batting practice was like putting on a clinic. Well, I think the year he hit that 60 plus in the same year Sosa did, Segs, I think that he finished, he had 140 some RBIs and in that 60, I think he finished fifth in the MVP voting in the National League. Think about that. True. Look that up and see. And I think Sosa in the same year was like ninth. He below McGuire, dude. He drove in almost 150 runs that year and hit those homers. I think he finished fifth in the MVP voting in the National League. And now I hope I didn't dream that up, but 98. I think that he was fifth in the MVP voting.
You're talking the year he hit 70 that year.
Did he? How many RBIs did he get that year?
147.
Okay, check that season. And it might have been, did he have 60 plus in another year, right, Sakes? Did he have 60 plus in another year or not?
65 the following year.
And how many RBIs that year?
147.
That one. Look at that year.
But that year he finished fifth in MVP.
Fifth in the MVP. Now you think about that. Dude, are you kidding me? You think, what? But yeah. That's now. So when the Cal Raleigh thing, as much as, dude, I think Aaron Judge, look at his average, been a triple crown threat the whole year. But when you consider the premium position, you're a catcher, and you're leading the league in home runs, and you're not a good defensive catcher, right. But a great one. As much as this, I hate to say this for Aaron Judge, who's worthy of it, no question. How can Cal Raleigh not be the MVP?
Yeah.
If he hits two more, it gets to 60 or 59, I don't know, whatever it is. How can he not be the MVP considering the premium position and crouching behind home plate? No disrespect. Listen, you give it to Aaron Judge, I got no argument.
Right.
But how is Cal Raleigh, considering the circumstances, saying, I don't want to disrespect him, but how is he going to do this again?
Right.
The wear and tear behind the plate. Not that he can't hit 45 years in a row. Salvador Perez supplied some, they have that year, right? This has been phenomenal, and it's a first place team. So I to me, give it to either guy. I'm not going to argue. But man, and even though Cal's hitting, 240, 250 or something, six, you've told me, analytics people, that batting average doesn't mean shit. So you can't apply that. Well, Aaron's hitting 340 or whatever it is now, or 335, whatever he's at right now. Oh, then there's the numbers. And he's played more games than Judge and is a catcher. Yeah. And you don't – listen, I'm not arguing Judge has got 30 more hits. Aaron Judge is one of my favorite players in the league, and I'm a Red Sox guy. But you start to go the slugging the numbers favor the favorite, obviously, overwhelmingly for Judge. But you can't discount where he's at. Right.
Yes.
You can't discount the defensive side of what he's doing. 100, he's going to end up with 130 RBIs or close, 125. Yeah. And, hell, even as a catcher, he's running the bases. What's he stolen, 14 of them? I mean, so you start to think, Segs, well, you could give it to Judge easily. You got to take the average out, according to the analytics people. Not for me, because if you hit for a high average, you're getting on base. And so if you were ever going to give it to the catcher who played like Buster Posey with about 35 more home runs, or 30 more home runs, this is the year to do it. I think he's earned it, but I won't have a problem if Judge wins it.
Yeah. The difference that people need to realize is this is not – MVP is not the offensive MVP. If it was the offensive MVP, it'd be Aaron Judge.
It's Judge, to me, and he earned it. Yes.
Running away. But with what Cal Raleigh has done behind the plate and being one of the best defensive catchers on top of being one of the best offensive players in baseball, that puts him over the edge for me, that – we haven't seen a season like this from a catcher in terms of the power standpoint, plus the defense. Like Yadier Molina was never hitting 30 plus home runs.
Neither. Pudge wasn't hitting 50.
Right.
He'd hit 320 and hit home, but 25 home runs and play phenomenal defense and throw everybody in the world out.
Right.
Even go back to when the greatest offense that people still say it's the best offense ever is the mid-70s Reds, right? Mm-hmm. The early to mid-70s Reds. Johnny Bench, what was his biggest season when he was the MVP a couple of times? What, he win it two or three times? He was a gold glover behind a plate. Bench hit, 275 with did he ever get maybe 40 home runs? I know George Foster hit 52, I think, one year for the Reds.
Twice Johnny Bench hit 40. Hit 45 in 1970 and then 40 in 1972.
Well, there you go. And that was
– and those were his two MVP seasons.
MVP seasons. Well, there you go. And drove in probably Johnny with that. Tony Perez was the RBI machine on that team. Guys get on to Perez. But Bench probably drove in a hundy in both.
Hundy plus. 148. 140. 70, and then 125.
Right. There you go. The year, and Raleigh's got .118. The year that Johnny Bench had when he hit the 40-plus and drove in 140 plays, it's one of the greatest seasons the catcher's ever had because Bench crouched behind the – and he wasn't getting load management. Johnny Bench was crouching in double headers too. Okay, so one of the great seasons ever by a catcher was Johnny Bench.
Yes. So yeah, I'm pulling up Ivan Rodriguez Pudge here. He
he had to hit 30 a couple times, didn't he?
31 once. He had 35.
There you go.
His MVP.
But he was always 300 plus. He was a high average hitter and played Gold Glove behind home plate regularly and had as good a snap throw and pounce time as anybody that's ever played. So
right.
You can take whatever you want, but bench of seasons. And this is as close as we've had. Posey had an MVP season, but didn't have that. He didn't hit 50 home runs. And Buster, great leader, great catcher defensively, put the ball in play. Everything he did on a World Series team was spectacular. Well, Salvador Perez had that, 45 home run saves the 1 year when he was in the MVP hunt and was catching every day as well. You can give it to Judge or Cal Raleigh, but the overall performance, I don't know how anybody would argue if Cal Raleigh is able to win it. Now, he's in Seattle. The other's in New York, and that doesn't hurt because you see him more, and there's more pub just naturally. And Aaron Judge is a humble approach. I don't hate it if either one – hell, I don't know if we give co-MVPs in baseball. You could, and nobody'd argue because they both damn well have had great seasons. So, but the season Raleigh's having is it's actually pretty cool to watch. You just don't want it to be the expense of your team, and the Astros got to face him – 3 more games this weekend, which may decide the division with 10 games to go because half game separates them. And then it'll be down to 7 games or 6 games when it's over, 6 games when the series ends. And if somebody has a 2 or 3 game lead, that's going to be hard to overcome.
Is Shohei your clear cut MVP in the NL?
Yeah, I don't see
it. Schwarber's close.
So Schwarber, now listen, you can, judging from leader, if you've taken everything into account, if you were going to sneak another guy in, Schwarber's having an MVP year. I think Philadelphia can win the whole thing, Siggs. I do.
Yes.
They beat the Dodgers again. I think they're that good, and nobody has more swagger and believability in their team than they do, and it's led by Schwarber and Bryce Harper there. And Schwarber's just a phenomenal – he's just a phenomenal hitter. I don't need to tell you that in San Diego – I mean, in Chicago. Hell, yeah. I was bummed that Boston ever let him get out of the building, Siggs, when he was there. But clutch, he has the flair for the dramatic. But – It's those two. And you know what? Soto's put up another friggin' monster season.
Yeah, he's number 3 on your list right now. You know, it's Ohtani kind of on his own little pedestal. And then Schwarber
is kind
of on his own little pedestal. And then Soto's right below him on his own little pedestal in the NL when it comes
to. That's going to go 1, 2, 3. And then the third one in the American League, you get the Bobby Witt Juniors who are always – talked about. I don't know how many home runs right now Bobby has, but the top two are Raleigh and Judge and Raleigh. And then the third one, I'm trying to pitcher.
If you're just looking at it from – it's Bobby Witt Jr. again.
That's who I would have had third, right. And he's
best great defensive infielder. Shortstop in baseball.
Great middle infielder and is phenomenal. Yeah. Witt Jr., I had him as third. And then there's the old in the National League going back. If it was any other year and your team was halfway decent, Paul Skeens should win the Cy Young as good as he's been. And he still may Siggs, but damn, can you give him any kind of support? The guy's stupid, man. Stupid good is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But the MVP, those are your 6 guys that are going to be 1, 2, 3 in each league. I think there's a little more right now questions in the American League. In the National League, you could. But all 3 of those guys had great. Soto's going to finish third. And Witt Jr. is going to finish third as well. It's the 1-2 guy. Ohtani probably a little more advantage than Judge over Raleigh, but close. And a Cal Raleigh for some may have the advantage because of the premium position he plays on defense.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here looking at the pitchers across AL and NL. I mean,
Skubal, obviously.
Skubal and Skeens are kind of on their own tier.
They're in a different stratosphere. Yeah.
There in Philly is having a great year. Garrett Crochet, which I knew that he'd come
in. He's kept Boston in it, yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, I could see maybe Skeens sneaking up if enough people.
Kind of like a DeGrom year, right? You know where DeGrom would like win 11 games to go 11-3 and win the Cy Young or 11 and whatever it was because they didn't give him any run support, but he was so dominant. He was still the best pitcher in baseball. Yeah,
I think maybe you could see Skeens if the writers get going a little bit and they take account the Mets just complete disaster of, I mean, what were they like 20 games over 500 at one point, and now they are just so far out of the race that, I mean, New York Mets fans are losing their minds. So maybe Skeens jumps up into that top three as the third right. guy in the NL for when we're talking MVP.
I'm trying to picture Skeens playing for a good baseball team. Oh. Say, that can hit with, again, getting a little, just give him 3.5 to 4 runs a game. We don't get 20 game winners very often in baseball anymore. So, you know, he's one of those aberrations, the way he pitches. That's like a 22-3 guy. You know, I've got, yeah. Remember back, we had like Vita Blue, it's 27-2 or whatever. Yeah. And we listen, you 20 game winners are like 3,000, not 3,000, but 300 wins with a pitcher. That's like every now and then it'll sneak in. Back in the day, like the Baltimore Orioles of the 70s, or was it late 60s, early 70s, had 4 guys win 20 games or more on the same staff.
Right.
Dobson, McNally, Dave McNally, Pat Dobson, Mike Cuellar, and Jim Palmer all won 20 or more games on the same staff. That's 80 to 90 wins for 4 cats. Hell, I don't know. Did anybody win another game for Baltimore? But we don't see 20 game winners very often. It's 18-6. It's 19. It's 16-4 gets you a Cy Young love. I mean, and then the rest of all these analytics we throw into, you know, what do you do in this stat? And that's half the stats that we can't even figure out with a calculator. But the truth is the 1 and 2 in both divisions, I mean, in both leagues, MVP are set. It just depends on, are you, you know, East Coast is going to love Schwarber more than Ohtani, but Ohtani's in a different stratosphere. And you, but listen, if Schwarber wins it, you and I aren't going to bitch about it because the guy's had a phenomenal year. His impact right. has been crazy. And in the American League, it's a 2-horse race with Bobby Witt Jr., who will win plenty more. He's just a machine on offense and defense.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's it. Segs, before we go, can I get back to, do you have another baseball thing?
No, nope, that was it.
I mean, really, real quick, and we can talk about it more tomorrow, but just the teaser of it. You know what the biggest shock, and I think we all get lulled into Aaron Rodgers, it's Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin's teams are all, and he's a hell of a coach. I would love to play for him. But Mike's teams always have winning records. You know what I'm not lost on? What did they always set their thing? Running the football, offensive linemen, and they knock the dog shit out of you on defense. If you want to win a game, run away from TJ Watt on offense.
Yes.
And you're dominating the Pittsburgh Steelers in the run game. It's rare, but it happened at times last year. It is rare that we go in and say, you know who the weakness is for the Steelers? A physical team up front in the run defense. And you know what?
Right.
You can gash them now, which is going to end up being a problem for them in the AFC if this continues. It's already a problem.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see if Aaron Rodgers gives them the offense that they think that he has already.
They're going to need it if this continues.
Exactly. If he's the quarterback that – if he's 80% of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay or 75%, they will win a lot of games in that division. It'll be, they'll get their ass kicked also in that division, but is it going to be enough? Can their defense do enough outside of TJ Watt to help get them to the playoffs?
Since Ben left, we've always said this, since Roethlisberger retired, the defense will get them where they need to go and they'll run the, yep. They'll be a physical up front. But when we're talking defense is suspect in Pittsburgh, then we're saying, okay, something's not right here. And I will argue that as good as Aaron Rodgers is, when you get manhandled at the line of scrimmage, you're going to get less possessions, Segs. And that defensive front in the front seven, it's baffling because every time I played against the Steelers, it's been just commonplace. When we get locked into just stereotype, oh, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. I never have to worry about their front seven.
Right.
They never. They're just going to be physical and they're going to be – and when back in the day, it was the case. And every year thereafter. And then we always bitched and said, when are they going to have the quarterback to get him over? Well, Ben, you know, post-Bradshaw, Ben comes in. What do? Well, they throw for 8 million yards and play some defense and win Super Bowl. Well, you got to have the quarterback. But even with a great quarterback throwing it, if Rodgers has a 4,200-yard year, it won't make a hill of beans come postseason if they can't stop that because they look like a team that forgot how to play run defense. And if it doesn't get fixed, you've got a major problem on your hand because this ain't the Detroit Lions offense, dude. And it's not those explosive, oh my gosh, Buffalo. It's not Baltimore's offense.
Right.
They have got to play defense and have Aaron playing at his best, but they don't stop the run very much right now. And they're getting gashed and physically manhandled.
Yeah, they head to New England to face the Patriots this weekend in Foxborough. So that'll be
because I think it's a dangerous game for them.
It is. It is. Drake Mays played decently well to start the season, and I think that offense still has some more gears that they can definitely push once they get that run game going a little bit better with the rookie Travion Henderson and Ramondre Stevenson. He had a great week last week, so that could be a dangerous game for the Steelers, especially if the defense continues to not show up.
So yeah, and in that division, Segs, now no Burrow for now.
Yeah.
Well, for most of the season, but you still got to deal with a, you know, to win the division, it ain't going through Pittsburgh. You know where it's right. going. And they live, they're right there in Maryland, in Baltimore. And I can assure you one thing, the guy who lines up as number 22 on his back and the quarterback, they'll exploit that till the cows come home. And yes. so will the coordinator, if in fact. So out of body experience, I never thought I'd say that about a Pittsburgh Steelers team, but we just get locked into thinking, oh, that's taken care of. Yet yeah. production does not match how we've painted the Steelers defense from years past. It just doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about that. Even we'll go deeper on that tomorrow. We'll also talk Dolphins at Bills is our Thursday night game.
Dude, I Dolphins, think this is going to be a curb stomp, dude.
Well, they are a double digit dog, 11 and a half.
That's hard.
Second.
That's Georgia playing slippery rock during a season and they're 33 point favorites.
Yes, you don't see that much in the NFL, double-digit dogs, even on a Thursday night road game. But the Dolphins
and a ton of college football tomorrow too, Segs, right?
Football. We'll start getting into college football.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Real quick, let me just tease this. Are we in danger of a college coach being fired during a season? How often does that happen, head coach?
Doesn't seem very often.
It doesn't. I'm trying to think because at NFL it does. Are we in danger of somebody? And I do want to talk, and this sounds kind of like hot take tease, but right. I just wonder how – I know it's happened, but I wonder, you know, it's rare that we have an interim coach as a college guy. You're taking over, right? But it does happen. We've seen it. We've definitely seen it. The other side of it is Dabo Swinney's comments from yesterday. Dabo, while he's a grinder and I love him, he can get a bit defensive and insecure when you ask him questions about the gig. Right? And he went all in on, hey, if they want to get rid of him, I'm still going to coach. I want you to just remember this now. We don't need any more comments from me or about this. You teaser for tomorrow. Let's just say who holds the cards there. And Dabo's right. He started listing the national championship appearances. And he's right. He's built something really special there.
Yeah.
But you could tell the little insecurity and sensitivities kicked in a little bit, as much as I love him. And when he says, oh, if they want to get rid of me, get rid of me. I'm still going to coach. I'm just learning how to coach now in my 50s. Well, guess whose job may come open unless they get this fixed?
Ew. We'll definitely hit on that tomorrow.
Who holds the trump card? Is it Dabo or is it Clemson? Considering the guys that the place where he went to school, that was always the speculation. Does that get so tense that is hovering over their head? And Kalen DeBoer is like, well, I'm sure Kalen DeBoer, when he saw his comments, is like, don't have your compass set for this place. I'm going to fix this, right?
just something we can talk
about tomorrow. Matter of fact, we can lead in the show with that tomorrow.
Yes. And I also think, could we see? Is it too early, but could we see an NFL coach and a college football coach both be fired after their next game? I think that's something else we'll talk about tomorrow.
Well, I think that you just teased about the Thursday night game, that there's one who may be hanging on a thread right now.
That might have been the guy I was talking about. That might have been. And then we also have all the Kawhi stuff that's coming back up that we talked about last week.
Yeah, I saw that, and it's a good follow-up, right?
Yes.
Because the football season has kind of painted that under the rug. Yes. Don't, because basketball is about to start, and I can't wait till we dive into that tomorrow.
Yeah, and because we have some possible punishments for both Kawhi and for the team. So some money could be changing hands, and
what the Clippers know how to do? Owners and players know how to do. They can get a little trouble in the Clippers. We've had a previous owner that's caused trouble for them in the past and lost his gig Well, yes. Lost his entire investment franchise to the gig. So
yes,
not saying it's the same because it isn't. The one's over here, which is heinous, we know, and why right. Sterling got fired, had to give up the team. But the other one is pretty heinous in the rules committee when it comes to getting an unfair advantage for a player at a team, right? And milking yes. that. So I can't wait till we hit that conversation tomorrow.
Yes. So we've got a lot to talk about tomorrow. We got Kawhi. We got Dolphins Bills. We got Dabo Swinney mouthing off to the reporters. Hell, we had Brian Kelly mouthing off like he always does, but then he backtracked a little bit and apologized. And
when you got to apologize, you know, you probably went a little too far.
You know, especially college maybe. Football coaches, because they are such kings in the kingdom of whatever town it is that they're in. So when they apologize, you knew they went too far. So
and next we can week,
even hit on that. Again,
I just want you to start thinking, the non-golfers, but I'm going to take it another place. Thanks. We'll hit this early next week because the Ryder Cup.
Yes.
And, you know, my obsession, and I know your obsession with golf as well. You just don't stress it as much as I do, but right. I know that you'd play every day 36 like I would if we were yep. living near each other.
Yes.
Is how much hatred should there be? And where is that? Just think about this next week, because I'm watching this stuff on the Ryder Cup and in the past how they just abused Colin Montgomery, dude.
Yes.
Oh, I'm talking. What, or go back way back when Jack Nicklaus picked up Tony Jacklin's ball marker for him and it ended up in a 16-16 tie because it was like a 2.5-footer. Nicklaus had just made like a 15-footer.
Right.
And that putt not only decided that match, but it decided the Ryder Cup. And it was like 2.5. It's in that, where you're gripping, right? And he picked it up and went and put his arm around, shook his hand and put his arm around Tony Jacklin and said, you weren't going to miss that putt. And Jack has said, what good would it have done? He was in the spirit of it. And he said, I've asked Ryder Cup captains every time since then. And they all say they'd have done what Jack did. Because I don't think Jack even admitted that his Ryder Cup captain wasn't real fond. He wanted him to putt it out. But in the spirit of the rule, imagine how Tony Jacklin's life would have changed. Thanks. If he'd have missed a 2.5-footer against you, think about that for a second. So I agree. I'll tell you how I feel about the Nicklaus competition. Is it go for the throat and cleat him with your spikes? Or did Nicklaus do the right thing? We'll talk about that. This is going to be the most rambunctious, hopefully respectful, but the loudest needle-moving Ryder Cup. And, man, these teams are friggin' stacked.
Yes.
And we'll get some guys on, hopefully. Maybe we'll get one on. Maybe get Colton Ostack. To talk about, should it be hatred or should it be competitive hatred? And there is a difference.
Yes.
We'll discuss that later, early next week before the Ryder Cup kicks in.
Yes, I am pumped for the Ryder Cup. So, again, we just teased like 18 things we're going to try and talk about tomorrow. We got Ryder Cup next week, and we've got a full slate of college football and NFL games this weekend. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Sean. We will be back tomorrow at noon. Peace, guys.